Hello, everyone. This is Jennifer Bryant, and welcome to the Practical Family Podcast, where we are building strong foundations and healthy homes. Welcome back to the podcast, Practical Family listeners. This is Jen Bryant, and we're talking about a subject today that has a lot to do with emergency preparedness. Now, why do I bring this up in the middle of talking about family and relationships and growing our families in God's way? Well, because last weekend, the state of Hawaii got quite an abrupt wake-up call on Saturday morning. We, at about 8:08 a.m., we got an emergency alert on our cell phones that said this, and I quote, "Ballistic missile threat inbound to Hawaii. Seek immediate shelter. This is not a drill." And I tell you what, I looked at that and I froze. I was with my two babies in my house, and it was a Saturday morning. We had just woken up, getting ready to enjoy a day at the beach or whatever the day would bring, and I get this message and my world stopped. It absolutely stopped. I had no idea what to do. My husband was not in the house. He was out surfing, as he usually is on the weekends, and I couldn't get a hold of him, and I didn't know what to do. I called our neighbor. What do we do? So we went over to their house. Thank God that they had communication with other folks who could tell us that, well, it was, you know, we found out later that it was an accident. It was never meant to be. But what that message did was to put all of our lives in perspective, and I'm so grateful that it did. I want to introduce to you today my friend Karen Hoag. Now, Karen is actually a nuclear engineer. She works at a U.S. national security site, and she focuses on nuclear non-proliferation, which means preventing the spread of nuclear weapons. She's also spent a number of years in the U.S. Navy teaching future nuclear operators on submarines and aircraft carriers the nuclear physics and reactor theory. Okay, that was a mouthful, Karen. you had to explain that later. So with your understanding as an engineer then and how all of this works and comes together, I was excited to have you on the podcast today to explain to the general public, just as a wife and mother, but also from that educational standpoint. So, but yet you are a wife and mom. You have two little boys that are 4 and 3. Your husband used to be in the Navy as well, and now he's in the reserves. And you guys are homesteaders. What do you have animals and stuff like that? And if, like, are you a farmer?
I don't know if I would call myself a farmer. I guess in Tennessee terms, we're not farmers. But compared to, you know, suburbs, yes, we're farmers. So I guess it depends where you live. It's all relative, right? Yeah. But yes, we are trying to grow our own food, and we have a dairy cow and 2 calves, and we have about 30 chickens and turkeys and a large garden, and it's a fun life. Yeah, it's really exciting and new challenges, and I love the way that our kids get to kind of understand what it means to work with their hands and do things ourselves. It's a really nice way to kind of connect with just the ground and the earth and see things growing and earn it.
Right. What a great opportunity. I love that. I love that you're coming from both of those sides. So now that your husband is out of the Navy and in reserves, you got a chance to go back to work. And so now this being your full-time job, I'd love if you could share with us a little bit about, you know, what it means for you to get a ballistic missile threat and, you know, help us to maybe lessen the fear that is surrounding that. So your education being in nuclear engineering, what made you decide to even go into that field?
That's a great question. So I really loved math and science, but I wanted it to have an application, like a direct application. So more engineering side of things rather than science. And I had a really great teacher, actually, who was a math teacher in high school that kind of led me into the whole math and science world, to be honest. Teachers make such a big difference in our world. And then once I was kind of looking at different options of different types of engineering, I just fell in love with a nuclear engineering program at Texas A&M University. And love that it had direct application, and love the people and the program there. And it's definitely where I was meant to be. I am extremely passionate about teaching people and explaining nuclear physics and radiation principles, which I hope comes across as we talk for these next few minutes here.
Oh, sure. Of course. Now, what I love about your just ability to explain things. So I'm really hoping that families, as you're listening, that you, even though some of these terms and principles may be unfamiliar, that you would allow Karen to explain it in simplistic terms, really to help to recategorize the fear factors that often come with the idea of nuclear weapons, radiation, what all of that means. So I invited Karen to help to explain the principles behind the science of nuclear engineering so that it is a little bit more understandable to you. And Karen, can you share a little bit about what we were talking before the show about your goal, even in being able to explain this?
Yeah, sure. I think, you know, there's so many things in life that are scary, but a lot of those tend to be things that we can't see and things that we can't, we don't necessarily understand. And so I think that so much about radiation and just the word nuclear, there's so many things about it that are really scary because we don't know and we don't understand it and we can't see it. And so that's really my goal, is to just kind of give some facts and give some truth and make it relatable to people to understand the basics of it, so that if something happens, it's not like, oh, I read this article that said you should go to this certain place or do this certain thing. It's not necessarily based on that, because you might not have access to that certain place or be able to follow the rules of some article that you read. But if you understand the principles of what radiation is, and you understand kind of how you can protect yourself from it and what is truth and what isn't truth, then I think you can react to it accordingly in that situation. So that's kind of my goal, is to just talk through some of that stuff and make it less scary, because there's radiation all around us every day, in the soil, in things we eat. We irradiate each other because things in our bodies are radioactive. And so, you know, it's certainly not as scary as I guess it can seem.
Sure. Now let's just start with what is radiation? How would you describe that?
Yeah. So let me actually, if you don't mind, tie it into kind of that ballistic missile threat that you guys received, which just blew my mind. So I read, or I guess I saw it on the news right after it happened. And just, my heart just broke for everyone in Hawaii. I used to live with you guys, and I just can't imagine how all of you parents and kids and adults and everybody there was feeling after you received that. And so, let me talk through kind of the phases of what would happen, which hopefully will never happen, and hopefully we never see this. But just to kind of make it a little less scary, let's talk through kind of what you would see if it did happen and how you could prepare against that. And I'll tie that into the radiation, if you don't mind.
Yes,
so,
go ahead.
So, and I know this is heavy stuff. Talking about nuclear weapons is really heavy stuff, but I hope we can kind of make it more of a learning lesson and an understanding thing. And, so yeah, but I just want you to realize or to know that I definitely understand how weighty this is. So I'm not making light of it whatsoever. But so immediately after a nuclear weapon exploded, you would have an air blast that would be just an extremely high pressure wave moving outward. And there would be a shock wave and compressed air, just broken glass, buildings collapsing, the kind of thing that you would see in the movies of the aftermath effects. And but I want to highlight something, that's a relatively small area. So I think, you know, I read responses from people after what had happened, the ballistic missile alert had happened in Hawaii, and people on the North Shore were like certain that they were going to like immediately die. And that's not necessarily it's hard to kind of gauge or get a feeling for like what size you're talking about, but depending on where a weapon was dropped, it's an area of, you know, a a certain number of square miles based on how big that weapon was, but it's certainly not anywhere near like the size of Oahu. You know, you're talking a part of a city. So again, depending on how big the yield of that weapon. But for example, in Hiroshima, I had the opportunity to visit there and hear from a hibakusha who is a nuclear weapon survivor. And she was talking to our group while I was there. And I mean, she was a kilometer, which is less than a mile away from where the nuclear weapon was dropped. And that was like 15 kiloton or size, which I know might not necessarily mean anything to you guys, but is, you know, somewhere around what a basic device would be, a nuclear weapon would be. There's estimates that the most recent test of North Korean nuclear weapons is somewhere around like 100 kilotons. So significantly higher than the 15 kilotons, but still, point being, like, she was less than a mile away and is a survivor, and she's not the only one. And so that area of this initial kind of air blast is not the size of Oahu. It's something smaller than that. And then I should clarify for weapons from like a North Korea or something like that, not necessarily massive ones that have been created in the past from countries like Russia or other larger, more developed nations. So then the second kind of phase of a nuclear weapon would be the thermal energy, which would be just immense of amounts of heat and light. So that's kind of the fireball image that you might have seen in the movies. And the temperature there would be that of the interior of the sun. So we're talking like 100 million degrees Celsius. So there would be kind of two pulses of one of UV light, and then the second of heat that would burn your skin, cause eye injuries, things would be set on fire. The light from it could cause blindness, either temporary or long-term. So kind of that immediate thing of what just happened, things you would worry about are like your ears because of the pressure wave from that air blast. You might be knocked off your feet. If you were in it, like right at the epicenter, you know, certainly the heat and light and all of that would, it's not survivable. But if you're outside of that, then those immediate effects, lay down, try not to be knocked off your feet, try to prevent blindness by, I mean, I don't know how much closing your eyes would do, but look away, you know, things like that. But point being, after that immediate reaction happens, then the third thing, which is much more my area of expertise, would be a radiation's concern. So there is an immediate radiation, which has types of radiation, and then there's kind of the residual or longer term. But before we go into that, I kind of just want to explain what radiation is and make it hopefully a little less scary and put it in terms that make sense to me and hopefully you. So radiation is really just, it's energy. And that energy comes in different flavors or types. You might have heard things like alpha, beta, gamma, and I'll use some of that terminology here later. But really, there's stuff emitting radiation all around us, inside us. There's stuff in the dirt. There's normal, healthy stuff that we eat that's radioactive. Brazil nuts are radioactive. Bananas have radioactive potassium in it. There's stuff from outer space. You know, we're exposed to it all day, every day. But that's in low amounts. Radiation, it's kind of like the smell. I like to explain it like the smell of cow poop. So if you
that's interesting.
Yes. Well, you know, I live on a farm, so it makes sense to me. But if the stuff that's radioactive is the cow poop itself, okay, then the smell is the radiation. So the smell is like the energy coming off of it in this case,
okay,
in my example. Mm-hmm. So if you're near it, you can smell it. But if you step away, you can't. So as long as you're not, you know, next to it smelling it, then you're not. If you can't smell it and you're away from it, then you're not being exposed to it. And it's not doing a thing to you anymore. Unless you've stepped in it.
Mm.
If you've stepped in it, then now you're contaminated. And so now you're carrying that smell with you. You're exposing yourself to it. You're exposing anyone else who comes around you to it. If someone else bumps against your shoe, then they might become contaminated with cow poop too. Mm-hmm, so, mm-hmm. And you're tracking it everywhere. You're leaving a trail, you're exposing even more people to it, mm-hmm. but it's also like even worse. It's like invisible cow poop that you can't clean up unless you have an invisible cow poop smell detector, mm-hmm. A radiation detector in my example. Mm-hmm. So, it's a challenge, but I wanted to explain kind of that concept of like what contamination is, because I think that in this example of kind of what to expect and how to protect yourself, understanding what contamination is and isn't helps you to be better prepared.
Sure. So in this example, I just wanted to clarify, Karen. So in this particular example, you are using the cow poop as sort of a metaphor for that. So the radiation itself, when a bomb is dropped, the actual source of that is the actual poop. So you're not affected, but you can still smell it. But the radiation being in the air everywhere, and then, you know, people are saying to stay indoors for 2 weeks if a bomb like that goes off. But what's left in the air then, or the smell is in your example here, just will kind of die down over time, or how does that work?
Okay, so yeah, so let's talk about that. So now that kind of, you know what, you hopefully can understand kind of what radiation is and what contamination is. So there's two real parts of the radiation aspect of a nuclear weapon, which in addition to a nuclear weapon being just significantly larger than a conventional non-nuclear weapon, it has this radiation aspect to it. So this is kind of what differentiates it from just a normal weapon, a conventional weapon. So the first aspect would be kind of the immediate initial radiation. And that is two types of radiation primarily. It's gammas and neutrons. And that is coming from the weapon itself. So if you are in close proximity to where the weapon detonated or exploded, then you're probably already, you're already being exposed to very intense heat and light and the broken glass and all of that anyways. So, we'll skip that part. Mm-hmm. But if you're outside of that, then that initial radiation is not necessarily that big of a threat. If you're outside of that kind of initial blast zone, then what matters to you, and this is really what I want to get at, because I think this is where if you understand this aspect of things, then you can really protect yourself and you don't necessarily need to have read 20 different articles. You can make decisions for yourself. So the second thing would be the fallout. So in the case of a nuclear weapon explosion, if it's on the ground, then there's going to be the weapon's debris. There's going to be these what are called fission fragments. So one of the types of reactions that happens in a nuclear weapon is fission, where basically a large nucleus gets hit with a neutron is absorbed by it and it splits into two smaller fission fragments and it emits more neutrons. And that's where you'll hear of this like critical reaction or critical mass and chain reaction, all these words, mm-hmm. Because neutrons will go off to then cause more fissions and whatnot. So that's what's happening inside the weapon itself. And so those fission fragments then are taken up into what you've probably also seen in the movies, a mushroom cloud, and they would be coming up into it. And really, depending on how the wind was blowing and how cloudy it was and, a whole bunch of different other stuff, then these fission fragments and parts of the weapon or the weapon debris, and in addition, possibly even the soil that's now become radioactive because it's absorbed things like neutrons, all of that is kind of coming up into this mushroom cloud and then being dispersed in a much broader area than just the blast zone itself. So, this can go, like, now we're talking about the size of Oahu or mm-hmm. outside of a major city and things like that. And there's a whole bunch of different, people devote their much of their time at different labs to kind of try to model it, but it's really hard to anticipate where it would go. But that's kind of what we're talking about when we talk about the contamination, because now you've got all this radioactive stuff that came up into a mushroom cloud and was dispersed and is basically falling from the sky. And so you know, Jen, you mentioned, you said that you didn't really know what to do, and your first thing was just get them outside or out of the house, is what you mm-hmm, said. Mm-hmm, and I mm-hmm. think, you know, we never know exactly how we're going to react, but actually that's exactly opposite what you should do in that case. And really you would want to get them in the house. Mm. And so I think talking about things like this to understand that, okay, if you've got this radioactive debris that's falling from the sky, assuming you're not in the blast zone itself, you know, but it's falling from the sky and it's going to settle on all different things. And depending on the wind, it might be blowing through your windows. And so kind of, what do you do in this situation? Mm-hmm. And so I think this is where we can kind of talk through some of the things of how to protect yourself, because there's actually a lot of different ways that you can protect yourself from radiation. So I'll give you three. And then I'm going to make you guess some things and kind of tell me what you would do.
Okay.
So really the three ways that you can really protect yourself from radiation is time, distance, and shielding. So if you can remember these things of like, okay, there's radioactive debris falling from the sky. And we just talked about what contamination was, the cow poop, and you don't want to step in the cow poop. First, I'll ask you about time, distance, and shielding. So would you want to increase or decrease your time outside?
So it sounds like I need to decrease my time outside.
You got it.
Not being outside.
That's right.
Don't go outside. So, don't run out of the house.
Exactly. Yeah. So you want to limit your time next to what is now the source, which is all of this contaminated fallout, nuclear fallout. Okay. Do you want to increase or decrease your distance?
Increase my distance. Make more distance between me and the bomb. Yes.
Okay. So from, and now in this case, the fallout, because now it's not just the weapon, it's the stuff that's now settling on every horizontal surface, on your roof, on the soil outside, on your window ledges, all of that stuff. And so, you want to increase your distance from it. You want to get further away from it. And then you want to increase your shielding as well. And so the two types of radiation that you care about most from these fission fragments, which is the stuff in the fallout, the cow poop now, that's now being spread everywhere, is beta and gamma. And so beta radiation is something that can be stopped by like your clothing. So as long as it's outside of you, it can be stopped mostly by clothing or a few inches of air. Gamma is it's more what we call penetrating. So you need things that are more dense. So like a couple inches of lead would significantly reduce it. Feet of concrete, many, many, many feet of air, several inches of metal. Those kind of things can give you both distance from the source and provide shielding. So, you know, people are in Hawaii are talking about, but I live in a house that has like jalousied windows that don't even close. Okay. Well, I mean, one, if it's possible, if it's reasonable to take duct tape and, you know, go over your jalousy areas, that's a good idea, just because if wind brings that contamination into your house, now you've got that cow poop inside of your house. Now, if you touch it because you don't have an invisible cow poop detector and now you're moving it everywhere and you're just spreading that contamination. So certainly things like that, like duct taping your jalousies, if it's reasonable, great. But you know what? If not, that's okay, because get in the middle of your house and you're still increasing that distance and increasing that shielding. And so that still is significantly beneficial. So other things that you could do is get in. So you want to be in the center of things. Like if you have a house, you want to be in the center of it. Or if you can get to like a school or a building, or all of you Honolulu residents that live in a apartment buildings, really large apartment buildings, you'll be really glad that you didn't pay the premium for like the window view in this case, but by being in the center of the building and kind of the center floor too. You don't want to be too close to the roof, because then fallout settles on the ceiling or on the roof, and you don't want to be too close to the bottom story, because the fallout is settling on the soil outside, and so that you're closer to it. So again, time, distance, shielding. And then just the last point about kind of contamination and like what would you do? Would you stay inside for how long and all these sort of things? So I would say if you can get to an area where you feel like you have distance and shielding, so you're kind of in the center of an apartment building, or you're in the center of a school building or an office building or something like that, then stay there for at least 12 to 24 hours, 1 to 2 days. Most of these fission fragments are decaying, which means like changing into something else, emitting radiation and changing into something else. And they're doing it pretty quickly. So a lot of them are really short-lived. So once they decay and they emit their radiation, they go to a ground state where they're not radioactive anymore and you don't have to worry about them. So that's really the majority of stuff. There's some stuff that's like longer lived, but that's going to take a long time to go away. But at that point, I mean, remember, we're exposed to radiation every day, always. So there's always going to be some background radiation. So yes, you should still worry about it, but much less than that immediate, like, first day or so. And just my last point about contamination is that, so one, we live on a farm, and two, I have two little boys. And so, like, if we drop stuff on the floor, I'm like, great, eat it off the floor. Let's build that immune system. I'm by no means a clean freak that goes around, like, chasing my children with wipes everywhere they go. But in this case, I would absolutely become a clean freak. I would make sure that anything that stepped into my home or office building or school or wherever I was, apartment, I would make sure that anything that had been outside stayed outside. That means if you've been outside, you're shedding your entire outside layer of clothing at my doorstep. I'm going to keep it outside. You're taking your shoes outside. You are not touching the soles of your shoes. You're somehow like slipping them off with your feet. Mm-hmm. And then once you come in my door, now that's a clean zone. And we want to keep from spreading that contamination. So actually just last week I met a guy who's a researcher at one of the national labs in the US, and he grew up in what was formerly Czechoslovakia, now Czech Republic. And so that was part of the Soviet Union. So they apparently had bomb drills when they grew up, and they did these things. They like practiced what it would be like to wear anti-contamination outfits by carrying plastic bags and duct tape around with them. Mm-hmm. And they would like practice pulling it on over them. They had a raincoat. They would like duct tape, I guess, around their gloves and between their gloves and their raincoat. And they carried this around with them. They did these drills at public schools. Can you imagine? Isn't that crazy?
Wow. That is crazy. Wow.
I know.
Talk about being prepared, huh?
Yeah, no joke. So, but that's something that in this case, like, I would certainly practice. I would try to have an outer layer. If I had to go outside, I would have that outer layer and I would shed that before I came inside. So again, remember that whole cow poop thing of if it gets on your clothes by stepping on it or by touching stuff or whatever it is, then you want to leave that outside and not bring it in. Or immediately wash your hands and try not to touch anything if you've touched outside and now you're coming inside, that sort of thing. So hopefully that kind of can make a little more sense in your head of like what radiation is, how it stopped. I'm going to quiz you, Jen, three ways. What are the three ways?
Well, I wrote them down, so I'm kind of a little bit cheating right now.
Cheating.
I write everything down, Karen, everything. So time. You need to decrease your amount of time outside. Number two, distance. You need to increase your distance, get as far away as you can from it. Number three, shielding, because there are beta and gamma energy rays, neutrons, what?
Types of radiation.
Oh, types
it's
of
gamma
radiation.
Rays, but it's, but you don't really see beta rays. So yeah, beta and gamma radiation.
So increase your shielding, like putting on extra layers or getting between, you know, more layers of protection, whether it's wood, metal, concrete, you said too. So just getting away, getting as far away as you can and inside is best. So I wanted to address real quick before we wrap up here, that emergency preparedness factor. So Karen, we brought you on to talk about the science behind what nuclear radiation can do and the effects of it, but also what we can do to prepare for things like this. Resources then that parents can have to prepare, just like in any other emergency disaster situation, like we have hurricane warnings, tsunami warnings, earthquakes, you know, that could happen at different points. The American Red Cross actually has a very extensive preparedness plan, supply lists. Actually, they say to make sure there's water, that there's food, non-perishable food, canned foods, that if you can get those together and store them in a place in your home, that if you need to be inside after a nuclear blast like this, that you have that already inside. I know Costco was even selling those big tubs of food and things that are already in there. So you can get pre-packed options like that. But we'll provide links in the show notes too, where you can go and find out more about that through these different sites. But the point of the matter here, as far as what Karen, what you shared with us, and thank you for sharing your expertise in this area, because like anything else, knowledge is power, you know, and just understanding something better often helps to dispel fear of the unknown. And I'm really grateful for you coming on to the podcast today. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. I was happy to. I'm certainly not a nuclear weapons expert. You know, there are people who know so much more about nuclear weapon effects. And so there's a couple different things that I can send you links to. But one of them, Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory does quite a bit about like protection factors of various buildings. So they have some cool graphics and articles out that kind of demonstrate like where you would want to be in the case of a nuclear weapon detonation. And then there's certainly plenty of other great articles out there that kind of are easy to read and give you more of an understanding specifically about North Korean nuclear weapons. And Jeffrey Lewis was a professor of mine when I spent some time in Monterey, California, and he is fantastic and just really approachable and very cheeky. So I can send you a couple of links for different things to read. And again, I realize the weight of this topic, so I'm certainly not making light of it, but it's, you know, always better to kind of talk through things.
It seems too, Karen, that it's better to know as much as you can, to prepare as much as you can. But when it all comes down to it, we really can't control everything. So that's when leaving our hands and our family in the hands of a God who knows. He knows. And that's not just, I know it may sound like a cop-out to some, but it's really not, because we don't have ultimate control over ourselves, our lives. I mean, everyone's days are numbered, and the hope and the peace that we have in Jesus, that he made the ultimate sacrifice, that he came to save us so that we would know and have that personal relationship with him, that when things on earth happen, when wars and things happen, the Bible says that wars and rumors of wars will come. And whatever day and age that is, whether we feel like we're getting closer to it or not, the best thing that we can do is to prepare, like actually prepare, and to prepare our lives spiritually and raise our children to understand that, you know, fear happens, but it's doesn't have to be the thing that keeps us from acting, from going and getting nuclear engineering degrees, so that the public can have a better understanding of what that means. You know, we still need to use our experiences and our talents to honor God in everything that we do. So I appreciate you coming on today, Karen.
Yeah, happy to talk about it. It's certainly something I enjoy talking about, is basics of radiation and what it is, to make it a little less scary.
Well, we're thankful for you. You've been listening to a special edition of the Practical Family Podcast. My friend Karen Hoag, who is also a nuclear engineer, came on to give us a little bit more information about nuclear weapons, how they work, what radiation fallout would do to a city if a city was threatened. And again, this is coming from a very recent threat, although it turned out to be a mistake. the missile warning that the residents of Hawaii received in January of 2018. So we just wanted to help to inform families about what practical steps you could take in case a threat like that ever came to your neck of the woods. I want to finish with just a fun conversation that she and I had after the show, because like you, she is also a practical family follower. So let's hear what Karen has to say about our Portuguese bean soup recipe.
So Jen, I have to tell you that as a practical family follower, I tried one of your recipes the other night. You have a Portuguese bean soup, and you are not aware that people outside of Hawaii and probably, you know, a few other places, but can't get Portuguese sausage. So our main ingredient, I'm out looking for Portuguese sausage, and there is no Portuguese sausage in East Tennessee to be found. So
Oh my goodness, Karen. Thank you for that feedback. You know what? It's funny. I tried to make it for my family over the holidays in California, and same problem. I could find chorizo because we were near Mexico, right? But there is no Portuguese bean sauce. I know. I just used the regular Farmer John's smoked beef sausage, and it's not quite the same, but it is darn close. But I'm so glad you tried the recipe. That warms my heart, because you probably need warm soup over there where you live in Tennessee right now.
Yes, where we have an actual winter. Yeah, I was like single digits over here, and I was missing the beach and missing the cool 60 degree summer or 60 degree winters that you guys have over there.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Well, hey, there is also a roast beef or a pot roast recipe on the site. So I know you all have cows over there, right? So you can try that
we
one.
Do. No Portuguese sausage, but we've got the beef.
Oh, well, good. I'm so glad you're looking at the site, Karen. Thank you. Well, thanks again, families, for joining us. This has been a special edition of the Practical Family Podcast. Please feel free to share this post with anyone who may find it relevant. I know this is great homeschooling material as well for all of us who are studying the periodic table of the elements in Cycle 3 of Classical Conversations, as well as the scientific effects of radiation. If you didn't know, now you know, and now you can look back in history and at things like Hiroshima and Nagasaki and a little bit of our the World War efforts that were made to protect our countries. You can find other articles for homeschooling or family encouragement at practicalfamily.org. We're also on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Pinterest, so check us out there. And please leave us a review on iTunes or Google Play, because those reviews help us to get up in those rankings and more people can enjoy what you've enjoyed here today. This has been Practical Family, where we are encouraging you to build strong foundations and healthy homes.